Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.
Hey guys, finding the perfect gift for the food lover in your life is easy, thanks to Goldbelly. Goldbelly ships America's most iconic foods straight from world-famous restaurants right to your door. So if you want to treat someone to Joe's Stone Crab from Miami, Franklin Barbecue from Texas, or desserts from famous foodies like Ina Garten or Martha Stewart, Goldbelly has you covered with free shipping anywhere in the country. Just go to goldbelly.com and for a limited time, get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's promo code GIFT.
Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.
Welcome to part two of our interview with Brad Blair about the ghosts of Michigan's Upper Peninsula.
One of the guys takes a snapshot of the mirror and Bob, the psychic, and you can see that the guy standing behind him that you can see in the mirror is holding a video camera. So the video camera goes dead. This guy takes a snapshot. As soon as he takes that, the batteries in his still camera go dead. At the same time, all of a sudden there's a haze like somebody was breathing on this mirror. And we have the picture of it. It looks something like a man's bearded face. I'm not saying it's not, just that we were all in there and the temperature kicked up and the humidity or whatever, but it was exactly what they had described to us. And you couple that with the battery drainage and the psychic sensitive who claimed that it was happening at the time. And we had three or four different occurrences right there to really kick things up for us. So we were excited. We got everything going. We got new batteries out. Luckily, we brought a lot of batteries because if we wanted to run to a store from this location, it would have been 20-25 minute drive each way. So we reloaded and we got going and we brought some old, and not old, but cheap cigars and thought we'd give the captain a salute. So we had our equipment set and we let the cameras run inside and we stepped outside in the side yard. And all of the people that worked at the lighthouse had left. They gave us the whole run of the place by ourselves for the night, which still amazes me when people do that, especially some of these old historic places with the artifacts. And to just trust us that much, it really humbles us, and we still really appreciate when people do that. So we had the whole run of Sishua Point Lighthouse to ourselves, and we were going to smoke these cheap cigars and stand off to the side and salute the captain. Thank you for having us here, Captain Townsend. We know you liked a good cigar. We're lighting these up in honor of you. So here's, I think, seven of us standing along the side driveway of the lighthouse. None of us smoke. We're all hacking and coughing and turning green, but we're bound and determined we're going to get through these stogies. So as we're doing that, one of the guys hits me on the shoulder and says, "Did you just see something?" And I said, I wasn't looking. And Tim, standing next to me, says, "Yeah." He said, "There was just something that moved across the window on the right." And he said, "Yeah, I saw it too." And we knew nobody was left in the lighthouse. The window to the left in the same room that they had claimed to see somebody go by suddenly turns dark. And there's a black figure, just pitch black. And you can just see the curtain pull back ever so slowly, just like somebody had grabbed it, was pulling it back, looking out. It probably happened all within 2 or 3 seconds. To us, it seemed like an eternity. And just stared out for a second. And then slowly, it didn't drop back closed, was slowly pulled closed. So all of us were just startled. This was the first time that we had really witnessed something of this nature, for a full-scale event like that. And after we stood there and, did you see that? Oh my God, what was that? The realization came that we had to go in and investigate that because that's why we were there. So then it was, well, who's going in first? So Tim and Steve, my co-founders, they were the first ones up in the door. They said, we're going to put two groups on the outside to watch, make sure nobody was hiding in there. Nobody's going to sneak out a back way, and to keep an eye in the windows where it occurred. So they walked in, and as they opened the door, they weren't hit with cigar smoke. They were hit with the smell of, I think the best way that Tim describes it is, it's like your grandma's cheap perfume. It's this very lilac-y, something you would expect an older woman to be wearing. Just hit them in the face to the point that they started coughing from that. Everything the rest of the night was quiet. We had nothing else happen, nor did anything have to. We tried EVP sessions. We kept taking readings. It was like everything that started that night when we got there and walked through the house culminated with the appearance of, we thought, was the captain because we were smoking the cigars. But once we got hit with that blast of lilac, think maybe it was the captain's wife making sure we didn't bring the cigars into the house. So that was our first big revelation, I guess, that yes, there is something going on, and there's something to this whole crazy world we call the paranormal.
That would definitely get you excited and wanting to experience more. Well, let's talk about lighthouses just for a second, because the shoreline of upper and lower Michigan is just dotted with countless lighthouses. And some are live in or were live in, and some are not anymore. But many of them hold ghost stories, and many of them are very, very historic, registered historic places. What is it about lighthouses that seem to have or seem to attract and hold spirits? And this is an opinion-based question, but I'm curious as to your thoughts.
Yeah. Every lighthouse has a ghost story. That's what we've figured that out through the years. Whether there's anything behind it or not, I think personally, because lighthouses are, they're built to help avert tragedy, but a lot of the times they're witness to it. We like to compare, like the just talked about Sichua. They love their ghosts there. They're happy. You walk into Sichua Point and it's like walking into grandma's house. You know, you think you're going to smell cookies and somebody's going to be there making you a sandwich. It's a very warm and comforting feeling. And then we go to a place like Whitefish Point Lighthouse, which I dearly love. We've investigated there quite a bit, and that's the home of the Great Lakes Shipwreck Museum. Mm-hmm. But it's also right on the coast, what they call the shipwreck coast of Lake Superior.
Yeah.
And so many ships have went down, and so much life has been lost there. And you think back to, and I think this probably holds with most lighthouses, because if it was just a nice stretch of waterfront, they don't just put lighthouses there for decoration. These are there to keep people away from treacherous areas and mark where they exist. For the most part, I think every lighthouse, you're going to find some type of tragedy. If it wasn't associated directly with the lighthouse, it was a shipwreck that happened near it. Sometimes, like I said, in the case of Sichua, Captain Townsend died there. Two of his wives died there while he was on as head keeper. You go out to a place like Whitefish Point, and it's somber. The feeling there is just different. And of course, you've got the Shipwreck Museum, so you have this beautiful monument to all the sailors that have went down on the lakes, and you have all of these artifacts that have been taken off these ships. And you've got it hits you when you walk in, and it's designed to do it, but they've got the recovered bell from the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, which was the biggest shipwreck in the Great Lakes. Mm-hmm. It is sitting right there when you walk into the museum area. And it's a real, I don't want to say foreboding, because it's not. You have this real somber feeling when you get there. So it's I guess like any other place. You know, the different lighthouses have a different atmosphere to them, but everyone, say there's always going to be a ghost story. Plus, I think the waterfront, and we talk a lot about this being right on Lake Superior. I do believe that there's something to the conductivity of large bodies of moving water and the paranormal field. It's in all of our years of investigating, it seems the most haunted places or at least the most wide-ranging places that we hit, if it's something that's near water, seems to have more activity than an old farmhouse, say, that we go to.
Sure.
So I think that's a big part of it. There's also the fact that back when light keepers had to be, before everything was taken over by the Coast Guard and automated, when light keepers worked these places, this was hard work.
Mm-hmm.
They were hauling buckets of oil a lot of the times up multiple levels of stairs, and they had to be on the ball. I mean, they had, if they weren't doing this job, people's lives could well be lost.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a very intense job. So I could see the energy from that too being left in a residual way, at least, if not an intelligent haunting of somebody that's afraid to leave their post still.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of factors, I think, into the lighthouse hauntings.
I think that's something that a lot of folks miss if you don't understand how lighthouses work. Just the sheer emotional intensity of that job, when that was the job, to go in there and to keep the light going and all the work involved, and then knowing that maybe you're watching for a ship to be coming in and it doesn't come in. Just
right.
the feelings and the emotions that you'd be overtaken by, day in and day out with that job in such a small confined space, it is no wonder. When you're talking about the shipwreck museums, and there's the one up there at Shipwreck Point, and there's another one, the Valley Camp down in Sault Ste.
Right.
Marie. Let's talk about some of the objects that are in museums. Do you have any stories connected to whether it be the Edmunds Fitzgerald or any of the other many shipwrecks that they have the remnants of in several of these museums that you can attribute directly to some of these wrecks?
You know, one of my favorite stories, and it's not paranormal as much as it was just a very bizarre synchronicity.
Mm-hmm.
We were investigating on the Valley Camp, which is a ship. It's an ore freighter that was decommissioned back in the early 60s, I believe. And it now sits docked on Sault Ste. Marie's waterfront as a full working museum. And they have two of the wrecked lifeboats off of the Edmund Fitzgerald.
Mm-hmm.
And we were down there attempting an EVP session. And we were trying to directly contact somebody associated with the Fitzgerald. There's still a lot of mystery to the Fitzgerald's wreck. There's a lot of different theories as to why it went down and what happened. It's never really been written off, though. So we were attempting, and they have a very nice memorial in the Valley Camp where these lifeboats are. And all of a sudden, our two-way radio kicks on, which, if other people on the team know that we're trying to do some type of communication, you know, we always let each other know, don't bother us, we want radio silence. So that was kind of a big no-no. So it kicked in, and one of the guys said, you've got to get up here to the back of the ship. I said, we're right in the middle of this right now. Can you give us 5 minutes? They said, no, you need to come up here right now. So, okay. Yeah, they wouldn't have done that. We all try and keep a professional air. They wouldn't have done that if something wasn't happening. So we rush up and get to the back of the ship. And as we were down there, we were playing the final communications between the Edmund Fitzgerald and the Arthur M. Anderson, which was the freighter that was following the Fitz when it went down. And it was the last communications that the Fitz made with anybody. It was Captain McSorley from the Fitz was talking to the Anderson, and the last communication, the Anderson asked, how are you doing up there, Fitz? And McSorley came back and said, we're holding our own. And that was the last thing anyone ever heard from the Fitzgerald. We get upstairs. We've been playing this, trying to elicit a response. We get up to the back of the ship, and the Arthur M. Anderson, which is still in service, was going by the Valley Camp at the exact time that we were conducting this EVP session. So that still put shivers up my spine when we did that.
Yeah.
As far as, and it also going right back to the Fitzgerald, and I can't say it was a direct result of trying to do EVP work with anyone on the Fitz, but we were in, as I mentioned, the bell that had been recovered from the Fitzgerald.
Mm-hmm.
Is in the Great Lakes Shipwreck Museum at Whitefish Point. And we were kind of wrapping up the night. We had everybody from the team in the museum. This was probably 4 or 5 in the morning. It had been a very long night. There's a lot of ground to cover up there. I think there's 5 different buildings on the campus that we had to cover that night. And we just said we'd like everyone, you know, that was here, because we had some odd activity happen that night. We'd like to thank everyone that had us here. If there's anything else that you want to relay to us, this is the time to do it. We're getting ready to take off. Thank you again for having us up here. And we heard, all I can describe it as, is like a static crackle in the air, which was right next to the Fitzgerald display that they have there. So I turned and took a picture with a digital camera, and something was in it. I couldn't quite tell on the viewer, but so I stayed in the same location and rattled off another 10, 15 pictures. And this blue mass that had appeared right where this sound was coming from didn't show up in any picture. It wasn't a reflection off the cases. We went back in afterwards when we went back out and tried to reproduce it, and we could never get it. Well, when we blew this, it was a blue, I don't want to use the word orb. It wasn't an orb. It wasn't dust. When we blew this figure up, it was a light blue energy form with a crack down the middle, and it looked just like a butt. It's the only way I can, that's, we describe it as our ghost butt, and we say they'd had enough of us. They mooned us. It was time to go for the night. So kind of shows us they might even be a little bit of some fun and games in the afterlife too.
Let me ask you ask you this, because it's so interesting to hear these stories about the shipwrecks and about the spirits that may be attached to some of these objects. But kind of bigger picture in closing here, because we're starting to run out of time, but I'm loving this conversation. But just as we overlook the area of Upper Michigan and how sparsely populated it is in the open spaces and the tranquility that you can have there, even without spirits, just the peace of mind, right. The quietness. It makes me wonder about areas like that are they more densely populated with spirits and ghosts than a more densely populated area that is populated with the living, or is it just because of its sparseness that it stands out that much more?
I think you hit it on the head with that second part with the latter. I think it's the fact that when you get into a bigger city and you're or any big, you know, larger population center, there's so much going on. And that's when people ask, why do you ghost hunt at night? Don't ghosts come out in the day? Well, yeah, but so do pedestrians and people driving up and down the streets and cutting their lawns. And it's just a matter of when there's less people around, I think you perceive what's going on a little bit better, and you don't have all of that clutter in the background. And the UP is definitely the I guess epitome of that. Our city is it's the oldest city in the state of Michigan, for one, but it's the second largest city in the Upper Peninsula with a population of 14,000. So that should tell you something right there. So it's very easy to find these little dark corners to go into and investigate and try these paranormal experiments. And I think really take out the background static that you would have in a lot of these bigger places.
That wraps up part two of our interview with Brad Blair about the ghosts of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.